Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Jake Volnick with you guys back here on 92.3 The Fan. Obviously, the Browns just hiring a new offensive line coach, Mike Bloomgren. And to help us find out who that is, we go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's Matthew Bartlett from At The Roost. Started things covering all Rice Athletics over there. Matthew, welcome on, and thanks for joining me today, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So a lot of people here, just in general, not overly familiar, I think, with the Rice football program as a whole. So the record doesn't look great over the last season, but how would you describe the feeling around Mike Bloomgren and his tenure there at Rice?
Well, I guess it's kind of twofold. So he inherited a program that was coming off a one-win season and had a gutted roster. So it took him 3 years to build it to where it could be sustainable. And he's one of three coaches in the history of the program that's gone to back-to-back bowl games. So it was a slow build. He was able to have some success. And frankly, a lot of it was learning the intricacies of how to be a head football coach versus the responsibilities of, hey, let me just focus on this one position or this one group. So I think in general, people were pretty happy with a lot of the things he accomplished. Obviously, the name of the game is winning. So that's one of the reasons he's not still there. He did not win enough.
Yeah, so we look at the record. 24-52 in his time there. He was able to bring them to two bowl games. But at the end of the day, aside from just losing football games, what actually went wrong on the football field that you think led to Bloomgren being moved on from?
A couple of things. I think really the first 3 years were a let's restart. He got pretty close to 500 the last couple of years. The biggest problem was they played three quarterbacks at least every single season because they had injuries. They got JT Daniels, the Georgia transfer five-star. He made it 8.5 games before getting hurt. So quarterback injuries was one. And then just a lot of, make or break moments where, when head coaching decisions might not have been what you want. Do you go for it here? Do you kick this field goal? Things like that, time management that, if you play the game again, maybe it's a different result. So I think there was a lot there that, they were a 500-ish team, and that's kind of what they were. And, maybe luck skews them up a little bit better, but I think it kind of was what it was.
And Matthew, from covering a team for as long as you have now, you've been handling At The Roost since 2018 over there. What can you tell me about a guy like Mike Bloomgren from a personality standpoint and how he interacts?
I think Browns fans are going to love him. He's one of the reasons that Bloomgren lasted 7 years without a winning season, which is incredible in the world of football today, right? Is because everybody wanted this to work. He's everything you want in a leader of men. He's everything you want in a football coach. Like, he gets the X's and O's. He has a long history dating back through some time in the NFL with the Jets and at Stanford with the OC's Andrew Luck. So he did so many things right, and he understands. It was really just the X and O's of translating it to Saturdays. And so I think if taking that piece out of his hands and saying, hey, just focus on the development piece, focus on the interaction and the people piece, I think those are some of the things that are really in his sweet spot. And I think that's going to enable him to have a lot of success here. When I heard that he was ending up going back to the NFL and taking an O-line coaching job, I thought that was honestly kind of the best fit for where he is in his career right now.
So if you describe him personality-wise as a coach, do you paint him sort of as a Dan Campbell in Detroit where he's like a motivator of men, or do you go in a different direction in how he handles his players and how he gets them to go every single, I guess, Saturday at Rice and how he's going to get them to go on Sunday with the Browns?
That's funny. Dan Campbell. I don't know if he's quite as fiery as Dan Campbell. But yeah, I think he would go there. He's done a really good job, I think, learning to trust the support system around him. And obviously it's a different when you're a head coach versus your a position coach. But yeah, really leaning into the resources he has available and holding people accountable. I think that's something that he really got better at his last couple years at Rice, is setting the bar at that expectations and kind of walking that out. And I think it's going to be really impactful for him working with pro players who, you know, have more experience and gotten to this point where you're not 18 anymore. You know, we all know how to carry ourselves. So you do it. Here are the expectations. I think that is going to go pretty well. I think he's not afraid to get in your face, but he's definitely not the, the rah-rah guy to that extent. But I think it'll work well with some good guys in the room.
How would you describe his relationship within the media? Because I know a lot of ways, like, guys can come off genuine in that way, and sometimes, like, it's not rah-rah, but sometimes the guys who are the motivator of men maybe don't translate as well when speaking to the podium. So what's it like with Blomgren when he gets up there and talks?
I think there was an initial adjustment period, right? Where, who are these people? Who am I talking to? But once that kind of relationship was established, I think he's really great. He is pretty honest, and, you know, I've sat through many conversations with coaches where you ask them to say a question and they don't answer it, but they say 100 words. He's not like that. He's pretty candid, pretty genuine, gives good answers and good insight. And he's pretty, you know, relatable. If you're good with him and good to him, he'll be good back to you. So I have nothing but good things to say about how he's treated me and the local media here at Rice.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Obviously coming in to coach offensive line, and we're talking to Matthew Bartlett here at the Roost on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. But as he comes in to take over the offensive line here in Cleveland, you mentioned the quarterback injuries earlier on. How was the offensive line play at Rice?
I think it was up and down, and that was part of what was frustrating, because as a head coach, you can't just hang out with the offensive line, right? Like, you have to oversee an entire football program. So there were flashes of good play here and there, but it just wasn't consistent enough, and which is interesting. And I say that on one hand, but if you look at where Rice sits in the hierarchy of the college football world and the talent that he was available to get, that was one restriction. But he sent a couple guys from Rice. You look at Nick Leverett, who won a Super Bowl with the Bucks. He's with the Cardinals now. Calvin Anderson was there right at the beginning. Justin Gooseberry came in, had a cup of coffee in the league. So sent several guys from Rice to the NFL. Ethan Onionwa, who just transferred to Ohio State for his final season of college football, he's going to be a day one or day two pick in the NFL draft. So Blomgren has a pretty good track record, and that's just at Rice. You go back to Stanford, and they sent a whole slew of guys to the league. So I think if you look at an individual development track of what he did at Rice and his time in college, I think that speaks very, very positively of it. I think if you look at, you know, overarching how line play fared, I think maybe there was just too much going on, because honestly, this year, in 2024, was the best season he's had as an offensive line, unit so far. I believe they ranked second in the nation in college football in sacks allowed per pass attempt, and one of the best run blocking rates in college football. So the production was really good this year, and they cycled through, I think, 7 different offensive line combinations because of injuries in 12 games. So there was a lot of adversity this year, but this year, oddly enough, was kind of the best year where everything came together. And then, you know, he has to not have the fortune of getting to see it play out what would happen next.
Hey, I mean, when he's coming over to Cleveland, you tell me good offensive line play, I like what I hear, okay? That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
I don't need him to win me football games when we're going from year that was pretty bad to a year that was pretty good. That's what we like to see, if that's the transition we're going to make. And speaking of that, Blomgren, a quick hire by the Browns. They fire their offensive line coach on Sunday in Andy Dickerson, and then by Wednesday, Mike's in the building. He has ties to former Browns offensive line coach Bill Callahan's, working with him previously, so clearly some connections there with the Browns. But What would be the sell for Blomgren to the Browns, do you think, to get a hire done that quickly, where in a lot of times in these NFL days, it's a long, drawn-out process to sort of fill those roles out?
Well, I think there's two things. So you look at the timing of when Blomgren became available. That decision was made, week eight of the college football season, early in November. So he had a long track record, runway to figure out what he wanted to do and where he wanted to go. And I believe at that point, the NFL was where he wanted to go. So him and his agent would have had ample time to get his name out there and say, hey, this is the kind of job I'm looking at. So that's one component. And then two, I mean, you look at his track record and his connections. You mentioned Bill Callahan. He knows a lot of guys and has spent time in the NFL before. So you take what he's done together and the resume kind of speaks for himself. And like you said, you're not hiring him to win football games. You're hiring him to coach the offensive line. And that's something that you can quibble about the rest of it. But he's been very, very good at that for a very long time.
So do you think that should be any concern, a college record for a coach that then comes into the NFL and is responsible for one unit? Is that something Browns fans should be worried about? Because, I mean, realistically, that's the thing they get to look at last that he had done.
Yeah, I don't really think so. It's kind of apples and apples to me, right? It's a totally different job. What you really want to do is make sure you're hiring a bright football mind and somebody that understands what he's doing. And I think you look at the NFL draft pipeline, the number of players that he's gotten to be NFL league caliber at Rice, and before that at Stanford, there's some development track records there. And then this season, when everything else went wrong, the offensive line was arguably the best part of this roster and was able to keep whoever was back there upright. So I wouldn't quibble too much about overall record. You're not hiring him to, come up with some brilliant offensive scheme or call the defensive plays. You want him to take an offensive lineman and make him better and get that scheme set up front. And I think that's something that over time he's done really, really well.
Again, Matthew Bartlett of At The Roost covering the Rice Owls here with us on the hotline. Do you think there's difficulty in going from having full control of a program and sort of being in charge of everything from top to bottom than taking a step back to where you were previously and going to a lesser role and playing a small part in a bigger picture thing rather than overseeing just everything?
I think it's really interesting. You just kind of look at how the dynamics between NFL and college coaching have changed over time, right? Like it used to be everyone wanted to leave the NFL and go to college because the NFL was so demanding. And now it's kind of the opposite. College is getting so demanding and a lot of guys want to go back to the NFL. So it's interesting. I talked with Blomgren before the season this year, and he mentioned that this year he's done less football than he ever had because a head coaching job was so much administration and so much fundraising and all of the other components that come into running a football program. So honestly, I think for him, especially being the head coach at Rice for 7 years, getting to step back and say, wait, all I have to do 24/7 is football. And I don't have to worry about this banquet or going to this donor or, making sure all the seats are right on the charter for this road game. I can just do football. I can imagine how that would be appealing, especially for someone who it's a hard job being a head football coach in college right now. So to be able to take that step back and just do, one position, just do football, it makes a lot of sense to me. If I were signing up for something, I might lean that way versus having to juggle, 1 million plates in the air?
Yeah, if that, you might be able to have to go a number higher, I don't know if a million even covers what college coaches have to do right now. I'll get you out of here with this one, Matthew. Do you think it's a seamless transition working in today's college game and then translating that directly to the NFL, especially for a guy like Mike, who's been out of, the league for over a decade at this point and been working in the NCAA and across college football?
I think there'll be some adjustment. It's different. It's not quite the same, but I think some of the things that Michael has going for him is, the pro style scheme that he ran at Rice. And he's very like very West Coast origination. A lot of his roots kind of tied into there. So schematically, and what he's bringing from, you know, that X's and O's component, I think a lot of that's going to translate pretty well. And then the second piece is, for those not familiar with Rice, it's a very high academic institution, and it's full of high caliber athletes and human beings. So the people that he's had to work with, you know, not to paint too rosy of a glean on it, but which was smart dudes who understood a lot of stuff. So if there was a group of college students who was able to execute and understand the schemes of any kind, I think this is a good bunch to start with. So I always go back to, I had a conversation with Miles Adams, who's now with the Lions, with the defensive line. He was there. And when Blumgren was hired, he was a senior on his fourth defensive coordinator in 4 years. And I asked him, you know, Miles, are you going to be able to handle, you know, one more new scheme? He said, we're Rice. Like, the scheme is easy. We just got to do it. And that always stuck with me. So I think when you get Bloom in the NFL, when you get him one room, he's come from high caliber guys who know what they're doing. And the NFL is full of professionals that this is their bread and butter. And if they want to eat, they have to do this. So I think those two components, he set up about as well as you could be for someone who hasn't actually been in that chair in quite some time.
Matthew, awesome stuff. If people want to check you out and more that you're doing it there over Rice across the athletic program entirety over at the Roost, let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, at the Roost on all the social medias, whatever they're calling all of them nowadays. And, you know, we'll see. Hopefully got some NFL drafts, feeders coming out. Maybe Bloom can get some connections, pull some guys to the Browns, and we'll have some more owls in the NFL. I certainly wouldn't mind that.
I don't think any of us would. Matthew, again, big thanks, man. I really appreciate you making the time and joining me today.
Absolutely. I'll take care.
He is Matthew Bartlett from attheroost.com, created it over there in 2018. He's been running it ever since and doing a great job. And he joined us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, let's react to what Matthew had to say at 216-474-0092. We'll get to your calls and more. It's Jake Volnick with you guys right here.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Here on 92.3 The Fan. I put it earlier in the week as one less cook in the kitchen. In the quarterback room and what was set to be quarterback competition. And it feels like just that, right? Deshaun was essentially clogging up the quarterback room, because you ask anybody in Cleveland, I think anybody would tell you pretty much wholeheartedly, or the majority of us would, you probably don't want to see Deshaun play another game. Right? His time in Cleveland has clearly been, I mean, off the field, leading up to it, a mess, and then on the field, what was supposed to be potentially the saving grace of, hey, off the field was an issue, but maybe you'll make up for some of that on the field and then clean up your act going forward, but the on the field never came. Right? He just struggled in his time on the field. It felt like he never had his feet under him. And then you had to consider the possibility, hey, even with Deshaun being hurt, even with the poor play, when you attach $230 million to anything, you sit there and think, well, you kind of got to put that thing out there, right? Like, you have to have that on the field being displayed because you paid $230 million. It's a lot of money. So even with as bad as he played, there was still sort of this fear or thought that Deshaun could just end up being your quarterback again in 2025 at some point, if nobody runs away and take the reins. Well, it feels like somebody has run away to take the reins, and you don't even have a person here yet. With Deshaun being out of the room, somebody has to take over, right? And with him not being able to play for the majority of 2025, potentially the whole thing, even if you don't get it right on the first try, the thought that you're not going to have Deshaun there for the second try either, you got two opportunities with two guys that you bring in
to really nail the quarterback spot. And Deshaun not being in the mix, I only ask if it actually helps you in this scenario. Because if Deshaun's not there, you're not going to have the Deshaun play. I saw enough over the course of 7 weeks. Okay, the inability to throw for 200 yards, the Browns' inability to score 20 points while he's on the field, and just how quickly that turned around just by handing the ball over to Jameis Winston, who did nothing incredible. It was nothing spectacular. I mean, he threw for a lot of yards, don't get me wrong. Like, there were individual plays and stretches in the game where Jameis looked really good. But as a whole performance, it wasn't like Jameis was playing out of his mind. And you saw just the success that came from changing the quarterback. I would argue you saw a change in mentality from a lot of the players in the team. Sure, you're disappointed as a whole with losing, but there seemed to be more hope when Jameis was under center. And then if you're the Browns, you kind of ripped it all away by starting DTR and, you know, mixing Bailey Zappe. But you had more hope than it felt like you had the entire course of when, honestly, Deshaun was on the field for a majority of his time in Cleveland. Right, aside from the second half of the Ravens game and playing the Cardinals, it was one of the first times since Deshaun was brought here that it felt like everybody was bought in, buying into what they're doing, and trying to get this thing to work with a positive attitude. I just think with you, when you eliminate Deshaun from the conversation, things just become a little bit clearer and a little bit easier for you to figure out what your next step is going to be. Because your next step, right now where you're standing, I mean, unless Deshaun was getting on the field and torching the rest of the NFL when he came back from an Achilles injury, there was no chance you were getting the guy past 2026. Right? Contract is up, and the Browns were washing their hands clean of Deshaun Watson at the very immediate chance that they could. You say, hey, can I get rid of Deshaun now? And when the word was finally yes, the Browns were going to be on pace for that. They were not going to want to go in a different direction. Like, that was, hey, there was no consideration that after the 5 years he was here, you were going to want to bring him back. Just the way that it was. And the way that it honestly still is. But that's where you stood, was, if I can move off of Deshaun, I would, and essentially accelerates it, right? He's not going to ever have the conversation of, well, you got to get him back in. You got to see what he can have because nobody's getting it done. At this point, it's just, again, bites at the apple. I'll continue to say that when we have this conversation. If you're the Browns, you're looking for as many bites at the apple as you can get. I'm taking as many chances at quarterback as I can find. You know, offseason where I'm probably looking at rostering four quarterbacks, I'm trying to get three guys who can compete for the starting job right now. And with Deshaun, it was going to be one of those guys. You didn't have the argument, right? You might have been able to bring three guys into camp, but you were never exiting camp with three. This is a year where you legitimately might be able to exit with three or two that you feel good about. Because, again, he's just not in the mix. It's as simple as having him out of the building. And, unfortunately, it has to come at the expense of an injury, right? I'm not rooting on Deshaun being injured. It's terrible. You never want to see a guy tear his Achilles. And then trying to recover from that injury, going through what I'm sure is not a fun process, re-tear it. It is not an individual knock towards Deshaun. It's just, we know that his contract has the Browns sort of in this cap hell. Where the first chance that you get to get out of it, you're running for the hills on that. Because it is the one thing that you're waiting on the Browns to be able to really turn anything loose, right? If you're able to really build on this roster, it is the one prohibitor that with every move you make, you have to think, well, the cap impact from Deshaun, that's huge. They're not going to be able to sign whoever they want. By just being injured, you're opening up the cap a little bit, right? You're getting insurance money. You're being able to build back towards this roster where, hey, we can once again just sort of turn these into signing bonuses. Right? We have more money to spend, if not in the cap, at least directly in your pocket. Just on the insurance policy, you have more money directly in your pocket to spend to help upgrade this team. So no, Deshaun getting injured around the individual players, I can't sit up here and tell you that it makes them better. I can't sit up and tell you that just by not having Deshaun even competing for the job, that morale goes up, that anything around the locker room improves. But I can tell you that less cooks in the kitchen is typically a good thing when you're talking about quarterbacks. The cliche everybody uses is that when you have two quarterbacks, you don't really even have one. Right? Well, the Browns are walking into a situation where they're looking at having at least two quarterbacks. Nobody really plays for the scenario where, hey, Jake, what if they have four quarterbacks? What if they have three quarterbacks? Nobody gets to play that game. And that's the one that the Browns are going to walk into is, hey, you had three guys who are going to be in some capacity around the same skill level, and one of them was going to be making significantly more money. To me, it is a vision of clarity. You just remove one guy, and now I can focus, hey, if I want to draft a guy, is he able to go right now? Does he give us the best chance to win legitimately with no money attached? Does it matter because anybody that we're signing is not going to be making anything that you feel like you have to start them? So we can see if the rookie, if you're going to go get one, which I imagine in some capacity, whether that's in the first round or they wait until the seventh, the Browns go out and do. Is he needing to be developed or can he win right now? And if it's developed, hey, well, now I go with my veteran quarterback that I'm going and signing because you know you're doing that as well. It allows the Browns to more clearly open a plan. Right? We've talked about wanting to show Miles a plan. Well, Miles, this one wasn't exactly in the cards, but hey, if you're looking for, we have to have a plan in place with clear parameters and clear vision on where we go, Deshaun being injured certainly pulls away some of the clouds on what this quarterback room could look like and what the starting quarterback on a week-to-week basis for the Browns is going to be from weeks 1 through 18. I can feel confident knowing that's where you're going to end up is either I have guy A or guy B, and if we got to bring in a guy C, this season's going awry anyway. But guy C's not going to be pulled in off the IR because $230 million makes the implication. It is simply you have what you decide to go into the season with, and you're hoping one of those guys can prove it. Not trying to dig back into the Deshaun well and hoping that something changes that hasn't shown itself since 2020. 216-474-0092. We'll get to some of your calls as well. I want to answer the question on whether or not is Deshaun's career actually over based on this injury. You can also get to me on X, at Volnick Jake, VULINECJ. It does help the Browns. And it also feels like the stepping stone maybe to Deshaun's career being officially over. With everything that happened off the field, it was already slim margins for him. You had to play good football to get your name back into good graces with teams, let alone just the idea that, hey, we know the baggage that comes with this guy, but at least he can win, right? At least he can play good football. You haven't done that. So now we're talking about baggage, and now we're talking about, okay, we also have a guy that went through a glenoid fracture that we had no idea what the recovery process even looked like. And then an Achilles tear. And oh, by the way, he re-tore that Achilles. It's a tough thing to come back from, I think, period, in the NFL. Like ACL tears, Achilles tears. Those are things that push you into spots that are sometimes unrecoverable. Right, you might be seeing that with even Nick Chubb right now. Pretty much tore everything in his knee, including his ACL. He never seemed to get back on track. And that's a guy that you know, no matter what, he's trying to get back on track. He's doing everything in his power. If there is a correct move to be made and he is doing the quote-unquote right thing, you know that he's the guy doing it. he's handling the business and taking care of it. So it just feels, okay, the Browns, if you're not playing in 2025, I mentioned last segment, you're probably not looking to play Deshaun in 2026 either, right? Coming off an Achilles injury, off of the shoulder fracture, off of just having a terrible 2024 in the games that you played. Why would you be looking to turn back to Deshaun? In the last year of his contract, when you've already spent a full season trying to find out what's next, there would be no reason to turn back to Deshaun Watson. So if you don't turn back to the guy in 2026, well, now you're a free agent. Who's seriously looking at the tape 6 years removed? And, I mean, more like 7 years removed if we're talking 2020 to 2027. But that full time removed from actually playing quality football. Find me a team that is willing to take that risk and say, man, we just really do think that Deshaun still has it. He just couldn't have succeeded in Cleveland. You can make the argument that the infrastructure was not there for Baker to succeed when he was here. Right? They were not ready to take on Baker Mayfield and develop him from a maturity standpoint as well as a football standpoint to make him a quality top-level quarterback in the NFL. I can buy that. Deshaun Watson is not an environmentally disaster, right? It's not that by the what you put him into in the spot that he's in is causing him to not succeed. May it be contributing to that? Potentially. I don't know the answer to that question. But it is the sole reason that Deshaun's not succeeding. It is the only reason that he's not even a top 15 to top 20 quarterback. No. Deshaun has been putrid. His play has been downright bad. There's nothing that you can do to save that. And I don't think any NFL franchise is looking at themselves saying, man, I'd love to be the next team to try to turn this thing around. So to me, yes, Deshaun's career, this second Achilles injury, ruling him out through 2025, probably does sort of close the books on Deshaun Watson as a quarterback in the NFL. It's not the ideal way for a guy to go out, but it's how it went down. Injuries have plagued him, and if you want to point to his play on the field, I can point to that and say it's bad. But the real reason this entire contract didn't work out, you never even got to see Deshaun play a full season. More than him just being bad at football since he was signed by Cleveland, the worst thing to happen with Deshaun's play on the field was the fact that he was just never out there. It was always something different. He is officially can be labeled injury prone. And I think you can take stabs on some injury prone quarterbacks. I think if you're the Miami Dolphins, you're willing to sort of, you know, try to teach Tua how to take less of a hit. The concussions are definitely a serious issue and a serious concern for you. But are they going to make you move off of a quarterback you feel relatively confident in? Probably not. But when it comes to, hey, you have tendon issues, right? Ligament issues. Shoulder problems as a quarterback, and there are shoulder problems that we haven't seen really in the NFL, only with time spent in the MLB, and even then it's not the same. I don't see anybody trying to change up their strategy and go get that guy. 216-474-0092. Is Deshaun's career officially over? Let's go out to the phones. Matthew's in Medina. What's going on, Matthew?
Hey, buddy. Here's what I would like to say. Deshaun has been terrible, like you just said.
Right.
And if we just didn't even get him in the first place, we had three first-round picks. And Baker was injured the year that we left. We traded him. If we would have just kept him for one more year, if he was bad, that's okay. You just draft a new QB. You have three first-round picks. That's that easy. But if he was really good, you keep him. Like, I thought that was just stupid.
Yeah, it's an odd scenario because, I'll be honest with you, obviously, like, off-the-field reasons aside, but from an on-the-field perspective, I almost have to applaud the Browns for going after a guy like Deshaun, not because of, hey, I think this guy's great and he was going to work out from the start. It was definitely a risk, but if they truly sat there and thought, well, we can't get Baker to mature where we want to, and even with that, we don't think we could win a Super Bowl with him, they tried to get better. Right, Deshaun, up until 2020, and when he was on the field, was an elite-level quarterback, and they were hoping he still had it. They just probably shouldn't have committed $230 million to it. That was probably where they went wrong.
Yeah, I will agree with that. He was playing great. I think he had like a 4,000-yard season. I think it was almost back-to-back. He was playing great. And then once he got the allegations, I feel like it just went all downhill and just went terrible.
Yeah, there was no saving it beyond that. That was the start of the downfall that has been a far fall from heaven for Deshaun Watson. And Matthew, I appreciate the call. I don't see a scenario where Deshaun is given an opportunity to extend his career. Because if you can find me a team, I'd love to hear it, 216-474-0092. Find me a team that'd be willing to extend Deshaun's career and actually take a chance on the guy. Because I think if it's not Cleveland, nobody else wants to take that on. Right? There were several teams, probably a dozen or so, that were lining up, willing to take their chance at Deshaun in 2020. What was it, 2020 or 2021, when they were willing to make the chance. You were willing to take the stab that, hey, I can handle everything off the field, and then from an on-the-field perspective, he's going to make the team better. We're willing to do it, right? The Atlanta Falcons were in the mix on that. The Miami Dolphins were in the mix on that. There were several teams willing to take that risk. It was just a different scenario. He's coming off one of the best individual statistic seasons that he was by far the best that he had. From a team perspective, not great. But that was the best that he had ever played as an individual. That's an easy sell to a team desperate for a quarterback. Again, an easy sell to get him there. Now that you have to deal with everything attached to Deshaun Watson, the injuries on top of it, and he just has not played good football. Deshaun has legitimately played maybe a game and a half of good football since he was brought here. How are you going to tell a team or sell to your team that, yeah, we want to bring this guy in, or in the Browns' case, bring him back and try this thing all over again? One, it won't work in Cleveland because I am a believer that Browns fans would set the city on fire if you re-sign Deshaun Watson to a new contract. This place is not standing if that's the case. But from another team, you're going to go out and you're going to put your entire reputation on the line, as the Browns did, and try and put your belief in a guy who hasn't even shown you he can do it on the field and has just since piled up on the injuries. And injuries that, for a lot of people, are career-ending or career-turning and not in the direction that you want it to go. I don't know a single team out there, even the quarterback needy teams in the NFL, right? The New York Jets aren't going to try that. Even if it wasn't this year and you look a couple years ahead, doesn't matter who retires, doesn't matter who falls off the face of the earth, you would still much rather take your chance at a quarterback in the draft than you would ever want to take a stab at trying to make Deshaun Watson into a reclamation project. There's hope, there's belief, there's excitement that comes with drafting a new quarterback or even bringing in a guy like we talked about at 740 and Justin Fields. You have hope that that can succeed. When you bring in a guy like Deshaun Watson, it is met with nothing but skepticism. Your fan base is not going to believe in you. Your fan base is not going to believe in Deshaun. The same way that he was met with really just a negative welcoming, right? A sort of cold-hearted welcoming into Cleveland is the same way that he would be met, and honestly, in a much worse way, anywhere else that he goes. It makes no sense from any aspect that you look at it, from a PR standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, and from a football standpoint. Bringing in Deshaun is a bad idea. Which, how is his career not over? How does he resurrect his career to actually make another run at being an NFL quarterback? I just don't think there's one out there. Not after re-tearing your Achilles while rehabbing for it. There's no way to do it. All right, 9 o'clock, as it always is, get a grip. It's Jake Volnick with you guys on The Fan. Jake, it is Jake Volnick with you guys here on The Fan.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.